You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. Just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. You're listening to On the Couch. On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
Fridays live from Los Angeles, 11 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, wherever you're listening in the world, I always welcome you. And as always, I have a great guest today. We're going to be talking about a fascinating subject, because we all need love. We all need intimacy. We all search for it, something we crave. But sometimes we have barriers to finding it. I do know that in my practice, there are a lot of clients who are always searching for love, but somehow either cannot find it, seem to sabotage it, don't feel like they're worthy. Whatever the situation is, I find this a lot. And if you're one of those people out there who would like to maybe find intimacy in your life, whether it's through friendship, romantic love, connect, reconnect possibly with family in some way, or work on yourself and your relationships that you already have intact. This is the show to listen to. Let me encourage you, by the way, call, please, me and my guest, 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. That's a Los Angeles area code. No problem. We'd love to hear from you. Also, I will be taking your emails live on the air, as I always do. Doc Michelle, D-O-C Michelle with two L's, at AOL.com. D-O-C Michelle at AOL.com. That is the response line email linked up here on LA Talk Radio, and I always love to hear from you. And so let's get with it. My special guest today is Dr. Daniel Paul. Nice to have you with us.
Nice to be here.
It's so great to see you. I know I've seen you before, and you've lectured in so many places, and you have written so many papers. And let me just say, he's a supervising training analyst at the Los Angeles Institute and Society for Psychoanalytic Studies. And Dr. Paul is also has a successful psychological private practice office. He's in Beverly Hills. Yeah, and we're going to be talking about a course that you are giving at UCLA Extension. It's the campus, local extension campus here in Los Angeles. If you would like to find out more information about attending, we're going to tell you about that. It's called Barriers to Falling and Staying in Love. And this is happening Saturday, October 29th, coming up. We're going to tell you again how you can find out more about the course, but we're going to give you a little breakdown of it and a little taste today. Right, Dr. Paul?
Yeah.
Just so people can understand what you're talking about. And I think a lot of people really misunderstand psychoanalytic therapy. So we'll talk a little bit about that, too. You know, in the movies, in the media, psychoanalytic psychologists and psychiatrists are always portrayed as these cold, unfeeling, and how does that make you feel? You know, the classic thing.
Yes. But
they're wrong, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Oh, good. And we're going to talk about that as well. Let's talk briefly about your private practice office. Now, I did say that you are psychoanalytic, and your office is in Beverly Hills. Let's just jump right in and say, how can people contact you if they would like to get more information about your practice and your teachings?
My number is 310-271-1858.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I have that number as well right here. We're going to be giving out that number if you would like to, you know, just get more information about Dr. Paul. Dr. Daniel Paul, right here in Beverly Hills. Great practice. He has really helped hundreds of people in his life. So it's a blessing to have you here. It's really
glad
nice
to be
have
here.
You here. Let's talk about the course, because I know a lot of people want to find out the barriers to falling and staying in love. And in your course description, okay, you say that the yearning to love and be loved in return is the deepest of human desires. Absolutely. Yet internal obstacles in loving and sustaining love often challenge this desire and may even disrupt its fulfillment altogether. Now, it's so true. Everybody needs it and yearns for it. Does everyone have these obstacles, do you suppose? Does everyone go through life feeling certain obstacles to getting love?
No, only people with certain, who've been raised in certain ways so as to create problems in later life.
Mm-hmm.
They then develop barriers to falling and staying in love.
Mm-hmm.
But even for those people, they may be able to succeed in overcoming the barriers and find romantic love. And the power of romantic love to change a life,
yes,
can then make them much more open to,
yes,
falling in love and staying in love in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, many people have not found love and don't know love. But those who do can find it easier to fall in love again, even if they've had certain problems in childhood.
Sure. And I don't know about your experience in the therapeutic environment, but you probably see a lot of individuals who have been divorced several times or have had poor relationships throughout their lives, and here they are, you know, in their 40s, 50s, 60s and up, and they really haven't really been able to find or establish a decent, loving, trusting relationship.
Well, that's why I'm here today, because I think if you can become more aware of the anxieties that prevent you from surrendering to love,
right,
then you can,
yeah,
have a much greater opportunity to fall and stay in love.
Mm-hmm. And that is the key word, is anxieties.
Yes.
I mean, those are fears that we get. Let's talk about the barriers, what you're going to be describing in your course and with us today, and we can go through each one with more detail. So what are some of the barriers to falling and staying in love?
Well, one is, are those people who are threatened by sexuality and intimacy.
Mm.
And these people will appear like caricatures of masculinity or femininity.
Mm-hmm.
They may
mm-hmm.
be like femme fatales.
Right.
Who, when it comes to consuming a romantic relationship,
mm-hmm.
back off. That is, when they find a man who is loving and sexually generous and can bring them to orgasm, they will reject him and choose an aloof person. Who is much less giving. Or there are the Don Juans.
Right.
Who, when confronted with the prospect of an intimate relationship, will escape to promiscuity. Now, that's one pattern.
Yes.
The other way of evading intimacy and sexuality, mm-hmm. in the face of anxiety is to retreat to becoming little boys or little girls.
Mm, very interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So,
and now, psychoanalytic theory
mm-hmm.
calls these people the hysterical personality.
Ah, okay.
Now, and what I'd like to do is talk about this from the point of view solely of the woman,
only because
of simplicity and
sure.
time.
Sure. And is this regression? When you're are you talking
yes.
about regression back to an earlier state?
Mm-hmm. Precisely. When I talk about retreating to
mm-hmm.
little boys or little girls, I'm talking about a regression to a childlike position,
yes.
because that's less guilt-inducing than to present oneself as an adult.
I see.
A sexual
yeah.
adult.
So how do some women present themselves as this little girl? I mean, I think we've all seen that from time to time, but how would you describe that?
Their focus will be on dependency
mm-hmm.
and being more childlike,
yes.
and evading opportunities to be more sexual,
yes.
or instead of being the queen of the ball and dressing up to the nines,
mm-hmm.
they will dress down so as not to attract the rivalrous and what they imagine to be attacks of other women.
Wow. When you're talking, something's really interesting to me always is when you talk about someone dressing up to the nines. Now, that's more, as we call it, histrionic. That's another reaction to the threat of intimacy and sexuality with some women is they become very sexually provocative, possibly. They overdo it.
I'm not talking about somebody who overdoes it. I'm talking about somebody who dresses up stylishly,
yes,
and seductively,
yes,
and expressing her sexuality and mm-hmm. welcoming the attention that she will get from doing so.
But you're talking about this little person who is an adult and has regressed back into a child so that they can assume that certain position of not opening themselves up to a threatening sexual kind of thing. Yeah.
Exactly. It's because of the guilt about embracing their own sexuality that they do this.
Oh, okay. Very interesting. Where does that, I think it's obvious, but where does the guilt come from?
Could I just say a couple more things
yes.
first about the typical kinds of patterns that you see?
I'd love
and then
to
I'll speak to where the guilt
okay.
comes from.
Great.
When these people come to therapy, they focus on their dissatisfaction with their lover, and they come after a romantic fantasy has been shattered. Secondly, they're very concerned about succumbing to their passion, abandoning themselves to their beloved.
Right.
And when they're tempted to, they create anxiety, or as I already mentioned, they reject a sexually generous and giving man
right.
For an aloof one. And the other curious thing is that there is a sense of social shyness and inferiority in spite of the fact that these women are very socially skilled.
Mm-hmm.
There's this underlying puzzling feeling of inferiority.
Mm-hmm.
Now let me get to your
okay.
question
yep.
about where this comes from. Children develop sexual feelings for their caretakers. Typically, a little girl of 5 wants to marry daddy mm-hmm. and eliminate mommy as a rival.
Yeah.
Typically,
yes.
the father is accepting of his daughter's seductiveness, but keeps an appropriate distance. And also, typically, mother is not threatened by the daughter's rivalry, but sees it as a developmental achievement, and she is proud of her daughter.
Mm-hmm,
now, this gives the daughter an opportunity to fully express her love and seductiveness for her father.
So this is really working through, in a sense, if this is allowed, healthier relationships with men as she grows older, possibly?
In the sense of fostering a full acceptance of her sexuality, she is allowed to have her practiced love in childhood
uh-huh.
in preparation for the real love of adulthood.
Interesting.
Now, this puts her in conflict with her mother, and the daughter will eventually renounce these wishes for father and identify with mother's values. And in that way, she will someday, she'll try to become like mother, and that way hope to marry a man just like the man who married dear old dad.
Right.
Now,
right.
there are other people where this does not happen. The people who are threatened by intimacy and sexuality in later life have different childhood experiences. The fathers of these little girls are very encouraging of their affection, and they become possessive. These feelings are not acted on. There is no molestation.
Right.
But there is an overly close relationship that develops with father. Mothers, on the other hand, are threatened and punitive when a little girl expresses her sexuality and, for example, wants to show off her pretty body or be seductive. And these daughters remain profoundly involved with their fathers well into their adult life.
So they don't respond when the mother expresses a certain amount of whether it's gestures or trying to take the child away and defocus the child on dad. The girl child doesn't resent the mother? Does she resent the mom?
No, she feels very guilty about her feelings for her father.
Ah,
you see, so what you have here is you have an explosive situation.
Yeah.
You have a seductive father who inflames a little girl's passion.
Yes.
And you have a punitive mother who makes her feel guilty about this passion. So the little girl gets all bottled up.
Yes.
And for that reason, when it comes time to surrender to her desires, she feels very guilty.
That's interesting. Let me just say this, folks. If you just tuned in to LA Talk Radio, you are on the couch with Dr. Michelle. That's me. And my guest today is Dr. Daniel Paul. He is a training analyst at the Los Angeles Institute and Society for Psychoanalytic Studies. He'll also be giving an extension campus course, which is going to be so interesting. It's entitled Barriers to Falling and Staying in Love. It will be at the UCLA campus, and that's coming up on Saturday, October 29th. We're going to tell you more about that. And if you would like to call in and ask any kind of questions to Daniel Paul, any issues you may have, relationship issues, problems, thoughts, anything, please give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, or of course my email address if you would like to send me an email question, any kind of question about something, do so, Doc Michelle, D-O-C Michelle with two L's, at AOL.com. So this is really interesting. We're continuing on now with Dr. Paul, the threat of intimacy and sexuality. So we're talking about guilt within the, specifically talking about young women. We're not going to get into men and their issue right now.
So parallel development. Same issue with men.
Uh-huh.
It's very parallel. It's just there's not enough time to show how this expresses itself with the man.
Yes.
But it's very parallel.
Okay.
Now, just to go on about the guilt and the effect that this had, and it's not just young women.
Right.
It's women throughout their lives.
Right.
This over-attachment to father and mother of this period creates lasting guilt. And one of the ways this impacts the woman is that she has a tendency to pursue unavailable men where it's not possible to consummate the relationship.
Right.
And when you explore the reasons for the guilt, you find that this is her way of continuing to be loyal to her father.
Isn't that interesting? It's fascinating. I think, and pointing that out in therapy, and we'll talk about that too, is a real
enlightening
moment.
And also I'm hoping that the listener today, by becoming more aware of the underlying causes for the barriers, will be able to use that awareness in a helpful way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other impact that this pattern of development has is the woman will choose a married man and will put all her efforts to try to get him to be seductive and to leave his wife. Now, if she is successful in getting him to leave his wife, invariably she then rejects him because she is too guilty about the intimacy. Why does she engage in this pattern? Because the little girl was made to feel that she was father's favorite. She was special. And then when she witnessed that father really chose mother, this is a terrible blow to her self-esteem.
Yes.
So if she can get the married man to leave his wife, it helps to repair her self-esteem. And that's why this is another common problem.
And then she goes the other way when he becomes more available and open to sexuality and loving and a more intimate relationship.
Because there's too much guilt.
Right.
Because unconsciously she remains to the father and mother of early life.
Right, right.
And
makes sense. It really makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then you have a woman who is frightened of the power of her sexuality.
Right.
And simultaneously believes these feelings are wrong because she's never had the opportunity to have her practice love of childhood, but is all bottled up. Therapy can help these people by because often feelings from the parents are transferred on to the therapist. So if the therapist represents the father and the woman has sexual feelings for the therapist, and she becomes guilty about it.
Right.
And it can be explored as a way of helping her to see the roots of the anxiety. If the therapist is represented as the mother, the girl may seek the admiration of the therapist for mm-hmm. certain achievements, mm-hmm. and then feel embarrassed or ashamed mm-hmm. about these desires.
As a psychoanalytic therapist, just to interrupt you a little bit, psychoanalytic is not really directional, is not too directional. Would you recognize and bring up that fact that she may be transferring onto you those feelings as a man, the sexual feelings, or does she sort of have this realization within herself?
Well, I myself tend to be rather active as mm-hmm. as an analyst, so mm-hmm. I think most all analysts would do that.
Yes.
I'm not directional, mm-hmm. but I tend to be engaged with the patient, mm-hmm. and yes, of course, I would interpret that because that's the only way she's going to be able to become aware of it.
Yes.
Is if you point out these unconscious
yep.
Factors, and in that way, she becomes less afraid of falling in love and staying in love.
That's so interesting. That is fascinating. And people will learn a little bit more about the psychoanalytic technique from you as we're talking here. The next point, another barrier. To staying, falling in love, finding intimacy, is the threat of being controlled by another. You talk about that.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of that in therapy. There's always a controlling factor in their environment growing up.
Yes, you know, this is something that many different people share.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about it in a very circumscribed way.
Mm-hmm.
Because it shows itself in many different ways.
Yeah.
There are some people who are so afraid of being controlled by their beloved that they adopt a particular strategy. They make themselves less vulnerable by controlling their emotions.
Right.
They tend to be intellectualized. Mm-hmm. They separate thought from feeling mm-hmm. so as to gain control of their mind and their body. They tend to be orderly, stubborn,
mm-hmm.
parsimonious or stingy.
Yes.
They also tend to be perfectionistic, meticulous, mm-hmm. and given to hair-splitting discussions.
Mm. Yes, I know that personality type. That's very interesting. Yeah.
Now, they love order and discipline and persist in the face of undue obstacles.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be rigid, and they lack flexibility. On the other hand, they're dependable, and they have high ethical standards.
Mm.
Now, all these character traits
mm-hmm.
serve the purpose of achieving control over oneself and one's environment
mm-hmm.
so as to overcome distressing fears of being controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Be concerned about the fear of losing control is connected with a fear of being seen as incompetent, insufficiently
okay.
informed,
yes.
and doing a bad job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these people need for control because another reason for it is they deal in extremes.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they have total control, then they feel they have no control at all.
Yes.
They have trouble making plans in advance.
Yes.
They have trouble making commitments because they're frightened that if they make a commitment, they may change their mind at the time of the commitment. So for these people,
yes.
dating becomes a real challenge because they may commit themselves to a date and then feel differently about it when the time for the date arrives.
Yes. In anything that is planned, so anything that is, say, off or not working for them, they feel very guilty about it because they can't, they don't really want to make that date or they don't want to follow through with that. But they do? Do they usually do that?
They do it, but they do it with anxiety about being controlled.
Okay.
It's very difficult for these people to make a commitment to any plans because it arouses this fear. And I would say anxious rather than guilty because it arouses anxiety
mm-hmm.
about being controlled.
Mm.
Now, how does a person become this way?
Yeah.
Two rigid demands for the child to control themselves in childhood instills in the child a fear of being controlled.
Mm-hmm.
Toilet training is one focus of this.
Yeah.
Parents have expectations that the child deposit their stools in a certain time, a certain way.
Right.
And children have other ideas.
Yes, they do.
Now, if this is done too severely, The child will develop a fear of being controlled. If this is done less severely, they won't feel so controlled. Now, but this is not just restricted to toilet training. It's about the whole socialization process.
Right.
That there are parents have expectations of codes of conduct, and children, and they can be very strict about it, or they can allow dissent and for the child to express their own will.
Right.
If they allow dissent and they allow the child to express their own will, these children will not develop a fear of control.
Right.
However, if it's the other way around, then they will in later life, and then they will express certain problems. I mentioned earlier the difficulty about commitment.
Right.
Being dependent is interpreted as the person, by the person, as being under the influence of another. So it is difficult for them to make commitments to another human being.
Mm-hmm.
But it extends not only to people. It extends to inanimate objects, to cars, to TV.
How do people control that?
They should work perfectly. They should never fail.
Yes, yes.
Now, and it extends to the weather.
Right.
The weather should not force any change of plans.
Right.
Now, if the weather comes along and they have to change their plans, they're not so upset about having to change the plans, but they're upset about this evidence that they don't control everything.
Oh, boy. They need to read a lot of Zen books to allow everything to flow through and let it go and just work with it. You know?
That would help a lot.
Yes.
Now, another way is to go with the flow, is to become aware of how these anxieties about being controlled have their origins in childhood, and that will also help them go with the flow more easily.
That's fascinating. It really is. I mean, it's such a common issue that I hear in my practice, and I'm sure you too.
Yes.
I had a control. I mean, poor controlling mothers out there, sorry. But, you know, I had a mommy dearest. You know, I grew up with a borderline, or you know what I'm saying? I mean, there was so much rigid control in my environment, and which, you know, in the psychoanalytic vein, it went all the way back to potty training, really. A lot of it did.
Yes.
So,
now, by the way, psychoanalytic theory calls these people an obsessive compulsive personality.
Yes. Yes, okay. They do. It's difficult. I, you know, even friends and people around in the business community, I see more of that. I see more obsessive compulsive, maybe because they see the world more out of control or not within their grasp.
Well, they're very dependable people.
Yes.
And there's a lot of rewards in society for being organized and dependable and reliable. Mm-hmm. So this culture rewards the set of character traits that this person typically has.
Yep.
Now, marriage is difficult. It's even more difficult than depending on things because and the way the marriages often are is there is a fear of making an emotional commitment to one's beloved.
Yes.
So because you then might be controlled and more might be asked of you than you are willing to give. So typically marriages of obsessive of these people who are frightened of being controlled are limited in the kind of commitment.
Well, that makes sense.
They have from the beginning.
Exactly.
But, you know, this works against the marriage as well.
Sure. Sure it does.
Now, and the other thing in terms of the sexual behavior of people who are frightened of being controlled, there is great concern about being controlled by one's beloved, opening up one's need for the beloved, and being vulnerable to the beloved, or being seen as weak and vulnerable to being taken advantage of.
Yes.
And the person wants to reassure themselves that this will not happen and it will not be rejected.
Yes.
So one of the ways that this happens is that often plans for lovemaking are made hours or days
Let's write down. Listen, you're available October 3rd at 3 o'clock. You'll be getting off work. Great. I will meet you in the bedroom at that proxima time. Right?
Yes, of course. And,
gee, that's so romantic, isn't it?
you're understanding the point. Now, these signals are often made non-verbally. And they both understand it. So, for example, one partner taking a shower or going to bed early,
yes,
is a signal,
right,
that they are available for sex.
Right.
Now, you put your finger on it exactly, Michelle. What this deprives the couple of is the joy and pleasure of succumbing to passion, mm-hmm, and spontaneous,
yes,
sexuality.
Yes.
And that's one of the great pleasures of sex, that it can be that way. And the act becomes more like a business deal.
It does.
Routinized and properly executed,
oh,
rather than a response to passion or,
yes,
love.
Yes, that's so true.
So...
I hear a lot of listeners out there laughing and shaking their heads, saying, oh, yes, I know that. Okay. I know about that.
So therapy can help these people by making them more aware of this conflict, mm-hmm, and thus more aware of how frightened they are,
right,
of exposing their need for the,
right,
other people,
right,
and getting hurt. And that can be very liberating.
Yes, it sure can. It's terrific. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, my guest today is Dr. Daniel Paul. He has a wonderful practice, psychoanalytic practice, in Beverly Hills, and we'll be giving out his number a little bit later in the show if you'd like to follow up and find out more information and or get help from Dr. Paul, because he's wonderful. He's also a supervising training analyst in the Los Angeles Institute and Society for Psychoanalytic Studies, and he's actually going to be talking about a course at UCLA, this is what we're talking about today. He's giving an extension course called Barriers to Falling and Staying in Love, and it's based on psychoanalytic theory, but it's profound, and you will learn a lot. We'll tell you a little bit more about how to sign up for that class, too, if you're interested. So, okay, so we're talking about the barriers. If you'd like to call in, by the way, let me throw it out there, 323-203-0815. We've had a couple of calls come through that rang a couple of times and then you went away. So call back if you'd like. We're really open to listening to your calls. Also, if you want to email me, docmichelle@aol.com, I'll answer any questions you may have as well as we go on live. So we're moving on to some of the other barriers that interfere with falling and staying in love. And the next one is unwitting. Now, this is fascinating. Unwittingly deriving satisfaction from suffering. Oh, gosh, those people are so hard to be around sometimes.
Yes. Just, by the way, before I was prepared to speak about a lot more material,
oh, yes,
than we're going to have time to get through today.
Oh, yeah.
So I wanted to just mention first,
yeah,
some of the other barriers that I will be covering,
okay,
in my course.
We're just giving them a taste today,
yes,
Dr. Paul.
In addition to unwittingly deriving satisfaction from suffering, another barrier is a fear of making insatiable demands.
Mm-hmm.
Another barrier is a compulsion to withdraw.
Mm, right.
Another barrier is excessive self-involvement. And a final barrier is the compulsive search for the perfect other.
Oh, boy.
So these are some of the other things that I will be talking about, mm-hmm, in my course. But let me go on now to people who unwittingly derive satisfaction from suffering, because this is another barrier to falling in love.
Mm-hmm.
This person seeks a partner, mm-hmm, who will abuse them because,
yeah,
they derive pleasure from the abuse. Now, clearly, this is not a prescription for finding happy love.
No.
Moreover, if they find a kind partner, they will provoke that partner to,
mm-hmm,
be abusive.
Mm-hmm.
Psychoanalytic theory calls this pattern masochistic.
Yes.
Unwittingly deriving satisfaction from suffering represents the whole totality of passive attitudes subsumed in sexual and interpersonal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Satisfaction is connected with physical and mental suffering inflicted by the partner. They unwittingly derive satisfaction not just in the sexual realm, but in the interpersonal realm as well. They seek to feign safety and satisfaction in a life of inconspicuousness, oblivion, and an ecstatic abandonment to misery and self-degradation. Now, the core of deriving satisfaction from suffering has to do with attempts of an intimidated individual to cope with life and its dangers by dependency and unobtrusiveness.
Right.
How does this happen?
How does this happen?
Okay, now...
How does this happen to someone? I mean, we've seen a lot of codependent types.
Yes. It's primarily a search... It's a defense. It's primarily a search through for love through sexual pleasure that is forced upon their them in their early relationship in childhood because they... they fear that they will lose love from an abusive person when the love of that person is vitally needed. Typically, this is the mother.
Okay.
Now, the mother behaved in a non-loving way, and adopting a posture of suffering as a precondition for love arises as a defense against recognizing how angry one is at the parent for not loving them. Instead, suffering is endured in the pursuit of love, in hope of wresting love from a non-loving parent.
Yeah, so does the child act like he is suffering, or does that child reach out to, I need more help than other children?
Sometimes the child acts like they're suffering. They have accidents. That they hope will cause cause the mother to feel guilty and give them love. And this is repeated with the beloved, but they don't ask, I need more love, and I'm upset with you that you don't give me more love. That's the critical question, Michelle, because to ask that question presumes that they would be aware of how angry they are at the mother for not being more loving. And anger is felt as dangerous. So anger at the mother or anger at the beloved is repressed. Now, and you've touched on the way out of this.
Right.
If you could acknowledge how angry you are at not being loved, at the mother, which the child can do, but certainly at the beloved, then you could begin to get out of this very self-destructive pattern.
So it's being able to recognize those feelings and open up and express that angry, repressed feeling.
Yes, but I must add, typically the beloved is felt to be vitally needed, and it would be and is too dangerous to risk doing this. That it doesn't happen. But yes, that is exactly the way out of this. Now, so also this is a typical defense against people who are afraid to engage in self-enhancing behaviors, and it shows itself at work.
The
kind of self-enhancing behavior, self-effacing behavior occurs because there is a fear that they will provoke antagonism from their coworkers. And they have severe work inhibitions because of this, because they can't show their best side. So as I say, the...
this is like the suffering individual.
Now, a word about therapy with a person who unwittingly derives satisfaction from suffering. The therapist should assume a fairly humane role and avoid an omnipotent role when working with people who derive joy from suffering. The therapist's warmth and friendliness can provide an emotional sustenance. This can modulate the person's assumption that suffering is a precondition for love. The therapist should also structure the analytic situation so that the person does not become deferential to an overly idealized parental image.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Respectfulness for the person's needs, mm-hmm. avoidance of any hint of authoritarianism
right.
in the analytic procedure,
right, right.
And an expressed belief in the person's potential for growth mm-hmm. as an independent person, and a genuine sympathy for their plight, a conscious presentation of themselves mm-hmm. as human mm-hmm. and fallible, mm-hmm. help inculcate yeah. an atmosphere yeah. of equality and make possible a new type of identification with the therapist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It is helpful to make explicit how the person's need for love of the rejecting partner
yeah.
results in an acceptance of suffering as though it were love. Secondly, one should help the person perceive their need to be punished and provocative
mm-hmm.
Of the beloved
yes.
perpetuates their suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, one should strive to demonstrate to the person that their hostility is not their own, but from their parents' actual hostility
yes.
towards them.
Yes. So there is a real profound transference, seeing a non-threatening, understanding, warmer therapist who's going to listen to them and not portray any of the personality traits that the parent had.
Yes,
yeah.
that mm-hmm. facilitates change.
That's
yes.
neat. That's wonderful. Can we move on to
Certainly.
Something else? I'd love to, because I know you have so much information and I love this, but this is why I'm encouraging people to check out Dr. Paul's UCLA Extension course, because it's going to be interesting. Barriers to Falling and Staying in Love. It's from a psychoanalytic point of view, but it's profound, and you'll learn a lot. We'll tell you more about that coming up. By the way, my guest is Dr. Daniel Paul. He's a training analyst at the Los Angeles Institute and Society for Psychoanalytic Studies. He has a private practice office in Beverly Hills. We'll give out that number, too, if you'd like more information about him and his practice, and if you would like some help. If you yourself may have some barriers to falling and staying in love, come on down. How's that? Come on down. If you'd like to call in also, 323-203-0815. Another barrier to falling and staying in love you mentioned was the fear of making insatiable demands upon other people. Now, that's sort of a shy sort of, I don't want to impose on other people.
Well, yes,
mm-hmm.
I'm talking about this in a rather circumscribed way.
Okay.
And particularly about how this occurs in depression.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in talking of, because that's an underlying fear mm-hmm. of the depressed personality.
Right.
And it's important to distinguish between acute depression mm-hmm. and chronic depression.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
because of limitations of time, I want to restrict myself to talking about chronic depression and address those barriers.
That'd be interesting. I'd like to find out about that.
Chronically depressed personalities complain of profound feelings of worthlessness and low self-esteem since childhood.
I think everybody has heard or known someone like that. Yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have generally led isolated lives
mm-hmm.
because of a fear of making insatiable demands.
Right.
The relationships that they do establish tend to be relatively superficial mm-hmm. because they fear mm-hmm. that if anyone gets to know them, they will reject them.
Mm-hmm.
They
yeah.
feel hungry to be loved, but they are too frightened of rejection to let you really know that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They present themselves as the person that they think you want them to be,
right.
while inwardly fearing making insatiable demands.
Mm.
They are angry that demands to be loved have not been met.
Right.
Now, this came about because their mother withdrew from them
mm.
when they made demands to be loved as a child.
Mm.
They concluded that their very neediness is destructive.
Yes.
The belief is at the core of their belief that they are unworthy of love.
Mm-hmm.
They fear making demands on their adult partners and instead established a superficial relationship.
Mm, right.
Now, the depressed personality generally feels something is missing, their whole life is affected by and is affected by what they feel as a fundamental lack.
Right.
Often they feel that they've been cheated, robbed, and crippled. The origins of depression lie in their experience of inadequate mothering. Now, this is a little complex concept, but the child does not really recognize that there is a difference between internal reality and external reality. When the child feels well cared for, they believe that the satisfaction of their needs came from within themselves. They feel self-sufficient and that they do not need to seek anything outside themselves.
Right.
That is, there is a fantasy here. There is an illusion of self-sufficiency, of having created their own nurture. On the other hand, the depressed personality does not get good care, care in childhood, and is not able to develop the self-confidence based on this illusion of self-sufficiency. Self-esteem will suffer from feelings of inadequacy and feelings of helpless vulnerability. They feel unlovable because they were not loved. Now, they believe they were not loved because of some deficiency within them, and not because their mother was deficient in the her ability to love them. And thus,
interesting.
Yes. Yeah. Now, that's core, Michelle, because helping them to realize that the deficiency came from mother's inability to love them is instrumental in alleviating the depression.
Okay.
So when the child complains about bad treatment on the mother's part, the mothers of depressed personalities typically withdraw.
Right.
The child experiences this as a failing in themselves, and comes to feel that their very need for love destroys the relationship. They become afraid of complaining. Any dissatisfaction with the mother is turned against the self. The turning of anger at not being loved against the self produces a chronic depression. And the depressed personality becomes afraid of making demands.
Now,
you can't have an intimate relationship if you are frightened of demands. You will drive your beloved away. You only can have a superficial relationship. So this is the major barrier that depressed personalities have in falling and staying in love. And often depressed personalities are more comfortable giving to others than demanding care for themselves. They are afraid to make demands on their beloved and typically choose partners like themselves, people who are afraid of making demands and who fear that the demands have the potential to destroy the relationship. Now, therapy with these people who are afraid of making insatiable demands often focuses on their fear of needing the therapist. They fear the therapist will regard their emotional demands as an imposition and he'll be driven away. Since the therapist is a representative of society, a successful experience of dependency with the therapist allows them to subsequently depend on their future beloved.
So it's very hard to conduct therapy, or have you really, as a psychoanalytic therapist, have to induce a lot of trust. You have to show a lot of, you know, trust that you are not going to judge this person for telling you what they need. You have to sort of become that person that was never with them growing up.
Trust is a very, takes time to develop. It develops when a person feels deeply understood. It develops when they feel that the therapist is emotionally present and there for them in time of need. But yes, it's a prerequisite for change.
You know, that's fascinating. I'm getting the wrap-up, and we do have CBS News coming up, so we're going to have to conclude this. This is so interesting. I'm glued to all this information. But I want to let everybody out there know that if you would like to, first of all, contact Dr. Daniel Paul at his Beverly Hills office. If you could give that number, that would be great.
Certainly. The number is 310-271-1858. And if you're interested in the course at UCLA, it's a workshop from 9 to 4:30 p.m. Mm-hmm. on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And you can register for it at 310-825-9971.
That's great. That's fascinating
stuff.
That's on
Saturday, October 29th.
Mm-hmm. And we've covered most of the barriers, but also Dr. Paul will be talking about the compulsion to withdraw, excessive self-involvement, which we've all seen, and the compulsive search for the perfect other. How many times have you always wanted that perfect other person? Well, I don't think there is anything as perfection, is there? So, Dr. Paul, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I sure appreciate it.
And my pleasure. And again, if you would like more information about this, you can contact Dr. Paul. I will put up all the information in the archives. The show will be available for downloads if you want to listen to it again tomorrow. And of course, we're always available on iTunes, as you know, folks. So give us a call again if you'd like more information. It's nice to talk with you all. As I always do say before I sign off, do take care of yourself first, because then you'll be great for other people. It's not narcissistic. You just have to get yourself together. All right. Have a great day, everybody. I'll be back on next Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning Pacific Standard Time. Thanks for joining me on the couch. You can stay there if you'd like. Have a good one. Bye-bye.